One of the weapons that private companies use against whistleblowers is the courts. Knowing that whistleblowers can't possibly pay attorneys to defend them over the long term, companies will file lawsuit after lawsuit, motion after motion, to wear the whistleblower down and, in many cases, cause bankruptcy. The whistleblower oftentimes will then just give up. There just isn't any more money. But sometimes the courts see through that strategy. Sometimes the good guys really do win. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Jonathan Taylor spent 9 years as an attorney for SBM Offshore, a Dutch multinational oil company. SBM Offshore also had a U.S. subsidiary called SBM Offshore USA. During the course of his employment with SBM Offshore, Taylor became aware of evidence of bribes being offered to government officials in return for lucrative contracts. This is a crime pretty much everywhere in the world. In the United States, it's a violation of something called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. That's a serious crime. In the end, SBM Offshore agreed to pay a $240 million settlement to Dutch authorities for violating the bribery laws. And in addition, SBM Offshore USA paid an additional $238 million for the same crime. SBM Offshore USA also pleaded guilty as a company to criminal charges associated with the bribery. That's a story with a happy ending, right? Not so fast. In July 2020, Taylor and his family were on holiday in Croatia when he was arrested by Croatian authorities on what's called an Interpol red notice. Although the warrant was withdrawn, Taylor was not allowed to leave Croatia. His family returned home, but he ended up stranded in Croatia for a year, just in case the government of Monaco, which had filed the charges in the first place, changed its mind and decided to seek his extradition. In the end, again, after a year, he was finally allowed to return to the UK, and a Croatian judge closed the case against him. As happens with many whistleblowers, Taylor, rather than being lauded and honored, has had his life turned upside down. His career is in ruins, his personal life is in tatters, and he was forcibly separated from his family despite the fact that he was never charged with a crime. And still, 2 years later, he's being pursued by the government of Monaco. We're very happy to be joined by Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. We're happy to have you. Jonathan, it's unusual that a case of whistleblower retaliation is so clear-cut. Usually, whistleblowing is complicated and messy. Not so with this case. You saw illegality and you reported it. Your company and its subsidiary admitted their guilt and paid a huge penalty. The story should have ended right there. What happened next? And how did Monaco get involved?
So it's about what happens upon discovering the past, the very corrupt past of SBM and its reporting. It was hell-bent on covering up as much as it possibly could and only disclosing to the authorities as little as possible. This became evident to me quite early on. And I started feeding the authorities with the full story, starting with the US Securities and Exchange Commission, and then graduating into about 5 to 6 other prosecutors. The issue, therefore, was I stymied SBM's obviously failed attempts to minimize the level of disclosure. And for that, I became enemy number one, if you will. All in all, to date, the company has been fined about $847 million, spread over 6 different prosecutors. Again, had it had its way, the fine would have been considerably less. There have also been imprisonments of 2 former CEOs and counting. But it was my involvement in blowing the whistle, which was, if you will, quite successful as far as whistleblowing is concerned, but certainly not in terms of my private life, that therefore unfolded. SBM was a golden fleece for Monaco. It was a blue chip company that Monaco wanted others to headquarter in Monaco. The relationship between the company and Monaco was close. Monaco has advertised SBM's oil-related products, they're in the oil extraction business, floating platforms, on its stamps. They go on trade missions together, the state and SBM representatives. Prince Albert has even opened a creche at the premises. And so for SBM to suffer, also being the biggest private sector employer in Monaco, Monaco was not happy with me.
I'm curious to know, too, who came to your defense? What was the reaction of the British government, for example? The British government over the past 20 years certainly has been on the wrong side of national security whistleblowing. But on these financial matters, they've actually been pretty good. Were they helpful to you?
So the British government got involved relatively late on. I fed information to the Serious Fraud Office in London, and they had used that to their benefit in various prosecutions. But when fast forwarding, I was under extradition proceedings, stuck in Croatia. Their initial public response was, what connection was there between Taylor being a whistleblower and his being arrested under an Interpol red notice in Dubrovnik in July 2020? Where was the relationship? Ultimately, there was an emergency question in the Houses of Parliament and the House of Commons, and then the following day in the House of Lords. And that defence was constantly repeated. However, such was the cross-party support for my case and the fact that the government needed to intervene. Within the week, the government's line had changed to Monaco and Croatia need to treat Taylor as a whistleblower. It's really difficult to ascertain what help they were to me. They publicly said they wouldn't get involved in legal proceedings in a third-party country, which of course it does when it wants to. I don't know what went on behind closed doors when various governmental officials came to Croatia. I don't know to what extent my case was discussed. I've got nothing to demonstrate it was. So my answer would be, on the face of it, that the support from the government was appalling, abysmal.
How were you able to deal psychologically with that year of uncertainty in Croatia? You were separated from your family. You were unable to earn any money. You had the prospect of arrest and deportation hanging over your head. How did you get through it?
So, very fortunately, I had a really good support group, predominantly of whistleblowing NGOs, journalists, some politicians. It was led by Martin Bright, who you probably have heard of from the movie Official Secrets and the Catherine Gunn affair. He was, by total chance, I was already in contact with him before my arrest. He was introduced, he was interested in doing a story on my experience before Croatia. And he pulled together some key people. So it was very helpful in getting by in Croatia, that I had this support network, that we were in regular contact to start with on a daily basis. They made the world of difference and garnered support, especially, you know, through the press and in Parliament ultimately. So it was seeing people do their best for me and really trying, which instilled confidence and hope in me. That's the best answer to that question.
We're speaking with attorney and oil whistleblower Jonathan Taylor. We're going to take a short break and hear more about his experience. Stay tuned. So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with British attorney and oil whistleblower Jonathan Taylor about his experience after blowing the whistle on an international corporate bribery scandal. Welcome back, Jonathan. Jonathan, let's walk through your whistleblowing. You were an attorney with a major company, SBM Offshore. How did you become aware of bribery that was taking place? And once you realized what was happening, what did you do?
So, An external lawyer for a client, Wilkie Farr, was the law firm, got in touch with my immediate boss, the general counsel, about some potential shenanigans involving the lawyer's client, Noble Energy. It did turn out that SBM had been paying bribes in order to win a contract in connection with Noble Energy in Equatorial Guinea. It was paying off the president's son, amongst others. And so that lawyer rang up the general counsel on the basis that he knew him, having acted for Exxon on another compliance issue a few years before. Now, the key to this was that my general counsel and the majority of the company had no idea about the bribes. The people that knew were the management board, all the salesmen, and a few people in accounts. But suddenly, as a result of that call, those certain people on the outside certainly became aware of what turned out to be a huge history of bribes being paid by the company. $250 million in the 5 years up to 2011 alone. And the sluice gates opened, and the accountants who were based in Mali and Switzerland suddenly gave us all this information about payments to agents, and I was provided with so-called agency agreements under which the bribes were paid, and so soon was in possession of an awful lot of information. Within days, it became clear that the company wanted to sort of cover up as much of its history, its ill-gotten history, as possible, and preferably marginalise it to the Equatorial Guinea bribe, which was relatively small in amount compared to the bribes being paid in Brazil, for example, and Angola. And so immediately, having become aware of the fact that the company was trying to do the wrong thing, I didn't want to have anything to do with that. I immediately wanted to cover my own backside, if you will. At the time, I was very well aware of a New York Times report about the Walmart bribes in Mexico and how the lawyers are very much involved in that. So my immediate reaction was to get in touch with the Securities and Exchange Commission through my US attorney, and I splurged a whole lot of documents and information on it. It decided that it didn't have jurisdiction and suggested I go to the FBI, or the Justice Ministry, Department of Justice. So it was in that order that events unfolded. Ultimately, I did a small tour of the world, helping the FBI in Washington. They came to see me, helping the SFO, helping the Brazilian prosecutor, helping the Dutch prosecutor, helping the Swiss prosecutor, amass this $847 million in fines. But I was only doing what I saw as the correct thing. You don't go to justice voluntarily, as was the plan, just to go to the DOJ and the Dutch prosecutor called Fiod. You don't go there and just tell them a little bit of the story. You either don't go at all, or if you go, you tell them the full story. And that was my position. It was found to be untenable by the company's management, and I therefore left the company, the young family, and without a job to go to.
As I said at the opening of the program, you did the right thing. You reported on illegality. The authorities took over. They found your allegations to be credible, and they prosecuted the case. That should have been the end of the story. So why were you pursued? What did the prosecutor in Monaco think he was going to find? And why forbid your departure from Croatia?
So if we just take a step back, first of all, I was subject to what we call a slap, a strategic lawsuit against public participation for defamation, quoting statements I'd made, which, of course, were true. SBM were trying to effectively just destroy me. So I'd run out of money, won't be able to defend myself, and shut up. That's what they wanted to do. So this is whilst I was doing my tour of the world seeing these prosecutors. They just wanted Taylor to shut up. Ultimately, they failed. I found an excellent lawyer, Otto Volgenant, from Box Law Firm in the Netherlands, and he filed a defence with 123 exhibits, and SBM pulled the case. But then, at the same time, they were reporting me to the Monégasque prosecutor. So Monaco was the place where pretty much all the bribes were born and executed, and I was now being reported to Monaco for attempted extortion, which was a total nonsense. But it doesn't matter. They still reported me. And of course, Monaco were very happy to take up the reins. They didn't inform me until 2017. They were actually, the charge was made in 2014. Then in 2018, the matter was dismissed by the Correctional Court in Monaco for multiple breaches of the European Convention on Human Rights. They were writing to me in a language I didn't understand, and there were huge gaps in time. It wasn't being conducted in a timely manner. However, it was allowed to, like a phoenix from the ashes, be reborn. And the next I knew, fast forward to July 30th, 2020, family holiday, just after lockdown, the first lockdown anyway, and I was arrested at Dubrovnik Airport. Amusingly, the reason given for my arrest, or the box that was ticked on the Interpol red notice paper, was bribery and corruption, which is kind of ironic. Next thing I knew, I was incarcerated for 5 days with two violent offenders and a drugs offender. Fortunately, on appeal, I was allowed out, but had to report twice every week to the local police station. I had to pay 15,000 euros in bail, had my passport obviously confiscated. But ultimately, my international lawyer, Toby Cadman, determined that the red notice should never have been issued, and persuaded Interpol that Monaco should never have allowed, persuaded by Monaco to issue that notice, and it was withdrawn on the 17th of December. My French lawyer, William Bourdon, quite a well-known whistleblowing lawyer, in the meantime was speaking with the investigating judge in Monaco about my voluntarily coming out to see him. It was all fixed. I was now due to go out towards the end of December 2020. However, the Monaco public prosecutor had to withdraw the request for my extradition in Croatia, otherwise Croatia were bound to keep hold of me. Unfortunately, the prosecutor didn't do that. And I had to stay out in Croatia for what was still another 7 months. Had the prosecutor allowed me to travel to Monaco to see the investigating judge, I would almost certainly still be married. I wouldn't have lost a year of my life, and I'd still be working in the law. So it's very much the signs of a vendetta, of revenge. You know, I repeat, SBM is the biggest private sector employer in Monaco. The ties between the state and the company are very long and they're very tight. And I was on the wrong end of a persecution by the state of Monaco.
What role do you think SBM Offshore had with all of this? I can't believe that a prosecutor would just decide on his own volition to target a whistleblower who had come forward to report on an illegality that was successfully prosecuted. The prosecutor in Monaco must have been put up to it. Can you speculate on that? Was the company behind it? Perhaps a government might have been behind it?
I was one of the first people to make the authorities aware in Brazil and the prosecutor in Brazil as to the corruption at Petrobras, that's the national oil gas company of Brazil, that SBM were funneling bribes to certain of its executives. And as a result of my information, what was known as Operation Car Wash began. And it turns out that the SBM's bribes, immense as they were, the tip of the iceberg. There are a whole load of Brazilian firms and cartels paying bribes, it was immense. And other international companies, ultimately, this led to huge protests. At one point, there were 50 protests in 50 Brazilian cities, each protest of at least 1 million people, and ultimately saw to the downfall of the president, Dilma Rousseff. She was in the past Minister for Energy and therefore the chairperson of Petrobras. She looked either entirely incompetent for all this going on under her watch or was perceived by some as perhaps knowing about what was going on. We'll never really know the answer to that. In addition, I should add that SBM were also found to be paying the Workers' Party, that was the president's party, at one point $300,000 for the 2010 presidential campaign in support of Dilma Rousseff. That was the first campaign. So what we're looking at there is, you know, the corruption was now undermining democracy in what is the fourth largest democracy in the world. So we know about the bribes in Angola, keeping people below the poverty line where kleptocrats are amassing millions, where that money should really be invested in the infrastructure, schools and roads and hospitals. But also, you know, just shows you the extent of the effects of corruption. So perhaps I helped at least the beginning of the end of Dilma Rousseff, who was ultimately, of course, impeached her time as president of Brazil. Further information I found out since I left SBM is the current CEO, who had only just come on board about a month before these revelations surfaced. He was found to have signed off on a bribe, this has been well reported, of just over $35 million to Angolan kleptocrats, including the then head of Sonangol, that's the Angola National Oil and Gas Company, someone called Manuel Vicente, who went on to be vice president of the country, to the tune of $35 million. So I've managed to amass information, certain of which I didn't even realise I had, I was able to divulge in 2021, a full sort of 8 years, 9 years after leaving SBM. But the overall message is, you know, I've had the kitchen sink thrown at me. Yes, I was very successful at whistleblowing, but I've had to suffer enormously. It is patently clear to me in the world of corporate whistleblowers, the world is simply not ready for us. There is no way on earth I should have suffered what I've had to suffer for bringing truth, the truth of corruption to justice. I have paid an enormous personal penalty and my life has been changed, clearly, forever. I was on a very happy family holiday on the 30th of July. I'm now, as I say, I'm divorced, I'm jobless, and I've lost a year of my life. That should never have happened. I am hoping that lawmakers the world over well, listen to my tale. It's not something I looked to do. It was something that came upon me and realized that robust laws need to be passed for the protection of whistleblowers.
I'd like to thank our guest, whistleblower Jonathan Taylor, and thanks to our viewers for joining us today. I'd like to leave you with the words of psychologist Dr. Jennifer Fraser, who said, quote, "Speaking up is one of the most difficult acts a person can carry out. It requires immense courage and sacrifice," unquote. She's right. It does. Be courageous. Be like Jonathan Taylor. I'm John Kiriakou, and you've been watching The Whistleblowers. We'll see you next time.